Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey, it's Eric Fox.
And I'm the salty sports bettor, Zach Natto.
And welcome to the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. We're here to talk to you about all things local sports, pro sports, and even throw in a little bit of sports betting on the side. So, Zach, why don't we get started with the week that was for Ottawa's very own CPL team, Atletico Ottawa. What can you tell us about some of the major signings that they've made this past week?
Well, the big signing that happened right after our last episode was we signed Dylan Pauli, an all-star goalie. He grew up in Edmonton and he played youth soccer with the Edmonton Drillers, which, can I say, is an awesome name, right?
Absolutely incredible name for a footy team.
And let me tell you, this guy's got experience. In 2018, he was playing in the Swedish fourth division for FC Gute, and he had one appearance in domestic competition, which is the Svenska Cup, I believe is how it goes. What else do you like about him, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to him because he's an experienced goalie. Like you said, playing in the Swedish fourth division, It's not your EPL or anything like that, but that's still some pretty valuable experience. He's going to help a lot to build up the passing game from the back end. He's got great footwork, and we'll definitely see them take a full advantage of that. At least that's what Mista says, their head coach. So it's going to be really exciting to see what they have between the pipes this year with a few signings.
Absolutely. And more than anything, Dylan's excited to play for Atletico Ottawa. It's a big challenge for him, like stepping up, like you said, from the fourth division to a big league like this. But he feels he's ready, and I think he's ready too. He's got 19 league appearances like under his belt, so he's ready for some stiff competition out there.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty intense competition. I mean, you can't complain with being born in Edmonton and having to come home and play in Canada in a professional matter. Like, that's pretty exciting. Now, on top of that, last Thursday after our episode, they also announced earlier this week, Canadian forward Jordan Webb was signed, which I'm looking at his stats and oh my goodness, this guy is going to be incredible. What do you think about him?
Oh, this guy's an absolute stud. He's a real veteran. He's been playing since 2010. So he's really got a lot of experience, which is going to be good for a lot of the young players on this team. He had a pretty interesting start compared to other soccer players, I think. He started in Singapore, which he's made over 240 games played, scoring 101 times and had 28 assists. That's insane. In fact, it's so insane that on one of the teams he's played for, the Tampines Rovers, he's third in the team's history with scoring 42 goals, and he's second in the amount of assists with 22. So he's a really strong power forward that I think he's going to put up major points for Ottawa Atletico.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see the fact that they're starting to really announce more and more signings. It's just building the hype for this potential season coming up. We still don't really know when the season's going to start, but I mean, the players are over in Madrid, as we've discussed on previous episodes, doing their training camp, getting ready, getting hyped. And I think the more players like this that they bring in, the better this team is going to be.
Especially when you get a player with so much depth, you know, he's an experienced forward, but he also has the ability to create chances for his teammates. So he's not only going to be boosting his own stats, I think he's going to be boosting his teammates' stats as well.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what he has to offer this year. Now, just the last thing about Atletico Ottawa that a lot of people may have missed, but earlier this week, they announced a new community partner, which is going to be huge for the minor soccer community. It's the Russell Soccer Club. This is a huge announcement, gives the Russell Soccer Club an opportunity to partner with a professional team like Atletico. So what can you talk about with that, Zach?
Well, it's just so great to see, you know, in a community like Prescott Russell, this soccer club is the largest. And for it to be like almost rewarded for it, you know, it's an organization that's nonprofit, it's run by volunteers. And now they're going to be getting high quality equipment to all the members and even programs for any players, like all ages and abilities. So it's a, I think it's a really great opportunity, expanding the brand for Atletico Ottawa as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be really exciting for everybody involved. And like I said, it's just the more that they make these announcements, like these partnerships, these signings, it's building the hype in Ottawa for Atletico Ottawa to make its debut in Ottawa, having played last year in that bubble, as we've discussed in previous weeks. But it's going to be really exciting to watch what this team has to offer and the different partners that they're going to address over the next few weeks here. But yeah, Atletico Ottawa, we're ready. We are ready to get to TD Place at some point this year, hopefully, and watch some games and watch you just go out there and dominate.
Please give us a season start date soon. I'm begging to mark it on my calendar.
I know, me too, man. It's going to be absolutely exciting to be able to watch some local soccer again. Now, sticking with local sports, I don't know if you saw this, but the Ottawa Blackjacks, they continue to build their roster. And what can you say about some of these recent signings? I know they just had one earlier this week, was it not?
Yeah, Kadri Gray. He's a 6'1" guard from the Six, Toronto, and he spent 4 years with Laurentian University. And this guy's stats are no joke. He recorded averages of 25.6 points, 7 rebounds, almost 6 assists per game. And he's averaged over 30 minutes across 81 games. So he was good enough for the team to have him stick around.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he sounds like he's going to be an absolutely incredible player for the Blackjacks. And with the announcements that they've been making, some of these player signings, you're going to be looking at a pretty big team. Like, there's some 6'7", 6'8" guys. These guys are looking absolutely incredible. And again, with the bubble situation last year where they had their tournament at outside of Ottawa, it will be nice to hopefully have a season where people can go to TD Place Arena, watch some pro basketball. And again, I'm really hyped for this team. Now, I don't know if you saw this as well, but yesterday they announced their 3 draft picks from the 2021 U Sports draft. And the names on these and the stats of these guys looks absolutely incredible as well. I mean, they have Ali So of the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks. They selected him 4th overall. They selected Guillaume Pépin of the University of Ottawa GG's 11th overall. And Grady Kanaku of the Ontario Tech Ridgebacks, 18th overall. So have you seen their stats? Like, some of these stats are absolutely incredible.
They're definitely going to be putting up points for our team this season. Sal, for instance, he averaged 22.2 points across 66 regular games for Wilfrid Laurier. He was named a second team All-Canadian, and the list goes on for all the awards. I won't bore you, but he's also played in Italy where he averaged 7 points across 4 games. So I'm excited to see what he can do in a 14 game season with the Blackjacks. And more about Pepin. He's a 6'6" forward, so he's massive. He's got an average of 15 points per game. He's played for the GGs in 36 games. And Kanku, he's a 6'5" guard from Montreal. He's got an average of 20.4 points, so that's pretty big. He's a guard who can shoot.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty incredible to watch these guys. So, like the first one, he's a 6'1" guard from Ottawa. Then you have a 6'6" guard from Montreal and a 6'5" guard from Montreal. Like, these guys look like they're going to be absolutely incredible. Like I said, they seem to be building a really tall team. So it's going to be tough to play against the Blackjacks this year. But yeah, so Zach, moving on, let's talk about the Belleville Senators. The Belleville Senators had a bit of a rough week. They went to Manitoba. They played 3 games Thursday, Saturday, and Monday, and unfortunately came out on the losing side of all 3 games, an 8-5 loss to the Moose, a 3-2 loss to the Moose, and a 5-1 loss to the Moose. So what can you tell us about those games, but also a signing that they made over the weekend as well?
Well, like you said, they struggled against the Manitoba Moose, but that's what happens when you go up against a really strong team like them. And what's next for Ottawa, the Belleville Senators, is they just have to reshuffle things and keep moving forward. And a great way to do that is by signing some pretty big players. They signed Curtis Douglas to a standard AHL contract. He's joining the Senators after four seasons in the OHL between the Barrie Colts and the Windsor Spitfires. Now, he's also played more recently in the Alps Hockey League with the Lynn Steel Wings. In his most recent year with the Windsor Spitfires, he scored 30 goals and got 30 assists for a total of 60 points in 62 games. That's almost a point per game. So those totals were career high in his season. In the OHL, totally, he's got 168 points in 247 games. And what can you tell us about this guy's size, Eric?
I mean, this guy is an absolute beast. He's a 6'8" forward, like a 6'8" center. You don't see very many centers that are that big. Most of the big guys in any NHL, AHL teams are typically on the back end. So, I mean, I think this guy is going to be absolutely incredible. Like you said, moving around the AHL, having 168 points and 247 games, it's going to be incredible to see a 6'8", 21-year-old centerman just coming down the center of the ice, crashing the net. It's going to be exciting to watch what he can do. And he even scored in his first game with the Belleville Senators. So you can't get any better than that, right?
Exactly. And just another fun fact about him, when he was playing with the Lynn Steel Wings in the Alps Hockey League, he only played 16 games, but he got 12 points from it. And that pushed him to third on the team after only playing a third of the season. So that to me is insane.
Yeah, that's definitely amazing. I mean, he was drafted fourth round, 106th overall at the 2018 NHL entry draft by Dallas. But you know what? Hey, he was a free agent. We were able to pick him up, and I'm excited to see what he can do. And you never know, if he continues to play as well as he did in his first game, I think he might be up with the big club at some point this season.
Oh, for sure. I bet you already some NHL teams have had their eye on this kid.
Definitely, definitely. Now, speaking of the big club, the week that was for the Sens was a bit of an up and down week. I mean, you look at the start last Thursday after our last episode, they lost 3-1 to the Oilers, and that finished up their season series versus the Oilers, going 0-9 versus Edmonton this year, which you can kind of expect when you're going up against guys like McDavid and Draisaitl nine times. You're going to get dominated. It's just the way it is. But then they followed up with a very close, heartbreaking loss, 6-5 to the Leafs on Saturday night. But then they turned around and had a 4-2 win against the Jets. So what do you think about how they played this past week?
Yeah, you never want to see the Sens on a losing streak. Even if we're used to it, it's just not good to see. But they're still stepping in the right direction. You know, the games weren't necessarily blowouts, you know, and it was only until maybe near the end of the period where the Sens lost control. So they just need to find their footing and keep consistent throughout the whole game. And their last game against Winnipeg, that was a pretty good showing, in my opinion. So I think the team's stepping in the right direction heading into next season. But for now, we just got to take it game by game.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an interesting week. And when you add in the few trades that happened over the last week with the trade deadline, basically dropping multiple defensemen in Mike Riley, Eric Goodbranson, and Braden Coburn, and then picking up Victor Mete on waivers on Monday, was a bit of an interesting move. A lot of people were kind of confused why they would get rid of so many defensemen. But at the same time, I mean, we have a lot of young guys that need playing time, including Jacob Bernard Docker, who just signed his entry level out of the UND. So, I mean, that's going to be exciting to watch, see if he gets into any games. But yeah, like picking up Victor Mete off waivers around noon on Monday and having him realize this and go, okay, I'm in Montreal. I'm about to play the Habs against the Leafs. So I'll just hop in my car, drive the 2 hours to Ottawa, and suit up that night for the Sens against the Jets was absolutely incredible. And I mean, if you guys were watching the game, he was 98 out there on the ice for Ottawa. So it's kind of an interesting addition to the team. But I mean, it was like you said, that game against the Jets was definitely a really good look for them, and they definitely seem to be doing well, and hopefully the rest of the season will improve. Well, that does it for this segment here on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9, but stick around because we will have more NHL, MLB, NBA, and all things pro sports talk coming up after the break. Stick around on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Eric Fox.
And I'm Zach Natto.
And you're listening to the Press Box. So, Zach, let's talk a bit about pro sports, shall we? And let's start in the NFL. There's been some pretty interesting news coming out of the NFL recently. And I know you and Lita, who were talking off air before she was not able to attend today, that there was a draft prospect to watch coming up in the NFL draft. What can you say about Nico Collins?
Oh, man, I love talking draft prospects. So Nico Collins, he's a wide receiver from Michigan, 6'4", 215 pounds. He's been described as a big possession receiver, more than able to make those contested catches. And in 2019, Collins was beyond solid for 37 caught passes for 729 yards and 7 touchdowns with an average of 19.7 yards per catch. That year, he was named Michigan's Offensive Player of the Year. That, to me, is insane. He opted out of the 2020 season due to COVID concerns and took on the bulk of his training for the NFL on his own. But he returned to play in the Senior Bowl, where he, after dropping 15 pounds, he showed some of that explosiveness that was originally missing from his game being a bigger receiver. And while he lost weight and seemed to gain speed, he didn't lose his passiveness of the ball. I think he's going to be a steal for whatever team gets him, as the questions around his ability to fully translate this newfound aspect of his game hasn't really been proven yet, but he'll fall the day two or three of the draft. Lita seems to think he's being linked with the Chiefs and Packers in their draft board. So both teams would greatly benefit from a guy like this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any team would greatly benefit from a guy that can have 729 yards and 7 touchdowns in only 37 catches. Like, that's insanely impressive. So I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch where he ends up at the draft. And hey, the Chiefs can always use more weapons for Patrick Mahomes to throw to, and the Packers can use any weapons to give Aaron Rodgers. So I think it's going to be an exciting draft, and he's definitely going to be a name that people should look out for.
Absolutely.
Now, sticking with the NFL, my Patriots had a bit of a rough year last year. They lost receiver Julian Edelman to injury early in the year. And it looked at times that he might be back, but he was never able to get back on the field. And this past week, he unfortunately announced his retirement from the NFL, claiming that the Patriots was the only team that he ever wanted to play for. He was drafted by them. He played for them. He won multiple Super Bowls with them. He used the hashtag Foxborough Forever because, hey, they play in Foxborough, Massachusetts, and he loves the fans there. He knows that the fans there absolutely love him, especially because of his epic catch in that huge comeback in the Super Bowl against Atlanta. I mean, it is going to be rough to see what the Patriots are without Julian Edelman because he's been there for so long, but I respect him. Basically, a career-ending knee injury, and he decided to retire as a Patriot, which I absolutely love, and I am super happy for him. Now, I know a lot of people online have been talking about whether he should be in the Hall of Fame, but I really don't see him getting there, even with the multiple Super Bowls. because his numbers were not really Hall of Fame worthy. So what do you think about this, Zach? And what do you think the loss of Julian Edelman will do for the Patriots?
Well, when you lose somebody who's been with the club for so long, soon they're going to start to notice missing pieces and stuff like that, and what he actually brought to the table. I'm just amazed that at 34 years old, he was still able to compete and compete with the same aggressiveness he always did. But eventually the wheels always fall off at some point. It also sucks that he missed the last 10 games last season due to an injury, and I bet he didn't expect that to be his last season. But wherever he goes forward, he knows that he played a hell of a season. He's won the Super Bowl multiple times after all, so he's got nothing to be ashamed of in his career.
Yeah, definitely. And I greatly respect what he has done for the NFL, what he's done for the Patriots, helping us win multiple Super Bowls. But I mean, I'm going to miss seeing him out there on the field. But it's like you said, it's one of those things where eventually kind of the wheels start to fall off, unless you're Tom Brady. For some reason, he's just eternal and can never, it seems like he's never going to retire, but that's a whole different story for another day.
Brady's aging backwards, it seems.
Exactly. It just seems like he's getting younger as he plays more. But sticking with the NFL, and to quickly wrap up, the NFL had a bit of a change in the rules in regards to jerseys recently. There could be a change coming to team, player, and fans everywhere, as NFL owners are expected to vote on a proposal to allow running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers to wear any number from 1 to 49, as well as 80 to 89. And then defensive backs and linebackers will also be allowed to wear 1 to 49 as well, if the rule change is approved. Now, Lita brought this up, and she said that, in fact, linebacker Patrick Queen on the Baltimore Ravens joked on Twitter with his quarterback, Lamar Jackson, asking if the quarterback would be willing to give up his favorite number, number 8. Now, Lamar apparently responded with just emojis of a money bag, a sleeping face, and laughter. So as much as Queen, who wore number 8 at LSU and is now 48 with the Ravens, might want the number, she really doesn't see Lamar giving that up anytime soon. What do you think about this possible rule change, Zach?
It's an interesting rule change to make. I don't understand how numbers affect the players or fans or anything like that, but I'm sure there's some official reason as to why they're doing it. So respect it. And I also respect wanting to keep your number. The number is pretty important to some players, and a lot of good players wear the number 8. It's the great 8, as some people like to call it. And Lamar Jackson, he's too good of a player to want to relent on that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I know every time a player changes their number, there's always the talk of, oh man, I just bought a jersey with their name and number on it, and now I have to change the number, or now I have to buy a new jersey, or some teams players will actually offer to exchange it, whatever. But the number thing, I don't quite understand why they want to make the change. But you know what? Like you said, with Lamar Jackson, the great 8 number is definitely very popular with a lot of players in any sport, for that matter. And it's superstitious for a lot of players to keep a number that they're used to. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here. Now, moving on to the fight world, there's a couple huge fights that are coming up in the near future. The biggest one that's coming up very, very soon is Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. Now, I don't know about you, Zach, but it's 8 rounds. It's going to be an interesting fight. What do you think about this fight coming up, Zach?
Well, anytime I get to see Jake Paul get punched in the face, I'm going to tune in. And this fight looks like it's going to be a pretty heavily contested one. Both guys really don't like each other. One thing that is interesting is a lot of people are encouraging Ben Askren to pull out an MMA move and slam Jake Paul to the ground to show him what a real fighter can do. But there is a stipulation in this fight that if Ben Askren does pull off an MMA move or any sort of illegal move, his prize money that he gets just for even showing up will automatically be forfeited. So he's going to be pretty motivated to just stick to punching, I think, in this one. Jake Paul is the favorite. Ben Askren, yeah, he's more used to MMA, so it's going to be interesting to see him adapt into this environment. But Jake Paul's been practicing nothing but boxing. I guess we'll see how much he's improved since his last fight.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting too, because apparently there have been some new allegations of sexual assault levied against Paul prior to this fight. So I guess the question now is, like, will that affect him in any way? Will that affect the fight in any way? But I mean, Lita is our boxing expert, and she even told us the real fights will be in the undercard, especially the Regis Prograis, who won back in October of 2020, versus Ivan Redkoch, who's coming off a loss in January. They're scheduled for 10 rounds, and for her, she thinks that Prograis will come out swinging after being inactive for the last few months. But the other guy has heart, but she still thinks he's going to be sorely outclassed in this bout. So the card looks like it's going to be pretty incredible, including the headlining fight with Jake Paul and Ben Askren. I mean, you got to watch out for some of those undercards. Those guys are really fighting to try and get their name out there, right, Zach?
Absolutely. Whenever you have hungry guys on the undercard, it's always a recipe for a good pay-per-view.
Yeah, definitely. Now, speaking of pay-per-views, Zach, I don't know if you saw the news earlier this week, but Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier, round three, has been confirmed by the UFC. Now, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, they're going to have their tiebreaker to see who's the real top dog between the two of them. The trilogy is set to come to a head July 10th at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yeah, so McGregor won the original bout between these two back in September of 2014, but Poirier came back and got the win in their last match January 23rd. So I don't understand what Conor McGregor is doing, considering he's been in and out of retirement and talks of, I'm never coming back to the octagon. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. So I personally think, and even Lita, like I said, she's our boxing and our fight expert on this show. Unfortunately, not able to be here today. But she was saying that Poirier will take this fight hands down, while McGregor will simply take the L and the payday, because Poirier is still hungry, whereas McGregor, he's very cocky, very complacent. So what do you think about this fight coming up, Zach?
Well, I'm just surprised it's happening so soon, but it makes sense. Both guys are getting up there in age. Both fights have been pretty exciting for different reasons. The first one was all in the buildup, maybe not so much in the finish, but the second one, that was a surprising finish. I think nobody expected for the fight to end that soon. Maybe some Dustin Poirier fans expected it, but I certainly didn't. McGregor's got a lot to prove coming up in this next one, to prove if he's still got it. You know, his last couple performances haven't been that impressive, except that last fight with Cowboy Cerrone there. But well, even that, I think, ended pretty controversially, I think. But anyway, all in all, I think it's going to be a little bit longer than their last fight, but I think the end result still will be the same, with Dustin Poirier coming out on top and getting his hand raised.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think McGregor's biting off way more than he can chew, considering he's been out of it for a while, and the amount of issues with him being cocky and complacent and stuff. He's gonna expect to just walk in there and win without any competition. But Poirier is one guy that you do not want to mess with in the octagon. Now, moving on to the MLB and the Blue Jays. I don't know about you, but they've had a bit of a interesting week since our last episode. They started off a homestand against the LA Angels as well as the New York Yankees last week. Now, Thursday night, home opener, so to speak, at their temporary home in Dunedin, Florida, their spring training facility. They come out, they seem really excited, and they unfortunately walk away with a 7-5 loss to the Angels. Then Friday, they followed it up with a 7-1 loss. But Saturday, oh my goodness, Saturday, they came out and they said, you know what, we're not going to let you embarrass us in our home park, so to speak. And they embarrassed the Angels 15-1. What an epic game that was. And it was delayed because of rain in the area. So it got delayed. And then when they came out from that delay, they just had the bats swinging left, right, and center all night. But Sunday's game, the finale of that series, was also postponed because of the rain. But then they went into a 3-game series against the Yankees. And the Yankees won the first game on Monday, 3-1. But the last two games, including including yesterday's game. 7-3 win Tuesday against the Yankees and a 5-4 exciting bottom of the ninth win by the Jays on Wednesday night. So what do you think about the Blue Jays this year? They've been a little bit up and down, but what are you liking about them so far this year, Zach?
Well, like you said, they had a pretty weird start to the season. Going into yesterday, they were in a weird spot in the standings. There was a four-way tie in their division with the Boston Red Sox at the top, and they just lost Hernandez for getting tested positive for COVID-19. So they're dealing with a lot of shakeups here, but as long as they stick to what they know and everything and keep doing what they're doing going into their matches with Kansas City, the Blue Jays could come out looking much more consistent and seeing a lot more W's in that schedule.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, they have a four-game set coming up against the Royals, like you mentioned, but then the big series next week, Tuesday to Thursday, against those Red Sox that you mentioned they are tied with. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the next week goes for the Blue Jays, because it's still super, super early in the season. So I don't want to say like it's a make or break schedule, so to speak, but they really need to like watch what they're doing and get on a bit of a win streak to start to hopefully pull away in the division and get themselves into a spot that they really enjoy.
And then moving on from baseball into the world of golf, this past weekend, we all were graciously treated to a second Masters tournament, pretty close to the last one. And it was a historic one at that. Hideki Matsuyama became the first Japanese PGA player to win the Masters. And it was a close finish. What do you got on the weekend, Eric?
I mean, the weekend was exciting. I mean, I couldn't believe some of the big names, including last year's champion Dustin Johnson, that missed the cut. And then you have, like you said, history in the making. You have Matsuyama, he gets the big win, and then you have Canadian Corey Connors, who ends up tied for eighth with -4, and the other Canadian in the field that made the cut over the weekend was Mackenzie Hughes. He ends up tied for 40th at a +4, but I mean, what can you say about Matsuyama? -10, first Japanese-born player to win the Masters, like you said. It was absolutely incredible to watch him over the weekend.
And one thing that really stood out to me is going into Sunday, he was at a +2. So he showed up like crazy to get that top spot, just beating Will Zalatoris by just one.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, like you said, it was very exciting to watch because it was just so close. And you were basically going to be expecting, it almost felt like everyone was expecting there to be a playoff in it because it just seemed like it was going to come down right to the wire. But he managed to hold on. He managed to get the win. And I couldn't be happier for him. I mean, setting history like that at the Masters of all tournaments, it was definitely a special weekend for him.
Everybody looks like a stud in that green jacket, don't they?
Oh my God, I want one for myself, but we all know that I've never golfed a day in my life, so that ain't happening for sure. But he's now a forever Masters participant as long as he wants to join. So it's pretty incredible for him for sure.
And that about does it for our pro sports coverage for now. We're moving on to the next segment after a brief commercial break. Eric has treated us with an interview with Davide DiCipio. He's a media manager and broadcaster for the Ottawa Titans, here to shed a little light on our new baseball team in the city. Super looking forward to that. Don't go away. We'll be right back on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Joining me today is Davide DiCipio, who works for the Ottawa Titans baseball team, and he's here today to give us some information about the team, the league they play in, and a lot more. Welcome to the show, Davide. How are you today?
Very good. How are you, Eric? Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. So first off, we just wanted to start off, like, what's your role within the team's front office?
So I'm brought on as the media manager and broadcaster with the Ottawa Titans Baseball Club. Of course, that covers a variety of things, I mean, speaks for itself, broadcast. So I'll be providing broadcast for on 96 games for the Ottawa Titans this summer, home and road. And then the media side of things. So from press releases, from player signings, posting information about the team, hyping the team up for its inaugural season across all social media platforms. I've also been, was summoned into a couple of other roles here in the meantime. I was filling in tickets, selling tickets, merchandise, until we find the right candidates and full-time staff for those two roles. So they've kind of put me into four roles at once, but I'm very proud to be a part of this team. Of course, I've nothing but great things, heard nothing but great things about our organization from an ownership point of view and our manager and our field staff. And I'm just blessed to be a part of this opportunity. And hopefully this is something that's here for a very, very long time.
Can you fill our listeners in on the background of the team, how it came to be?
Yeah. So, the Ottawa has deep roots in baseball, whether it's the Ottawa Giants and the Ottawa Athletics from the 1950s, who are affiliates of Major League Baseball clubs. And then 30 years later, Howard Darwin, who's a very successful businessman in the Ottawa area, who passed on about 10 years ago, founded the Ottawa Lynx, who are the AAA farm team of the Montreal Expos. Many, many great names come through that organization. Touch on a few. Joe Siddle, who from Windsor, Ontario, who covers the Blue Jays on Sportsnet right now. Matt Stairs of St. John, New Brunswick, was a member of that inaugural Lynx team. The list goes on and on. Charlie Montoyo, the manager of the Blue Jays, played for the Ottawa Lynx. Cliff Floyd. I can go on and on about the great names that came through the Montreal organization at the time. Then, really, the Expos leaving hurt the Ottawa Lynx and baseball in Ottawa for a brief time. The Baltimore Orioles were around for a few seasons, the affiliate in Ottawa. The Philadelphia Phillies had their was the last affiliate for the Ottawa Lynx in 2007. And then Miles Wolf, the commissioner of the Can-Am League of Independent Baseball, the founder, really, of independent baseball, brought the Ottawa Rapids to town in 2008. Then that didn't really work out after a year. Baseball took a back seat. Then the Ottawa Fat Cats of the semi-pro inter-county baseball league, which has been around for over 100 years now, made a pit stop in Ottawa for a brief amount of time. Then the Champions came back, or Miles Wolf came back and founded the Ottawa Champions. Then towards the end of 2019, the Can-Am League decided to merge with the Frontier League. So that ended the Can-Am League's run. So it also became North America's largest independent baseball league, which the Ottawa Titans are now involved with in our ownership group of Sam Cates and the Cates family, who owns probably the most successful independent baseball organization out in Winnipeg in the American Association with the Goldeyes. The Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group has a share in the team as well. Of course, we know their success story with the Ottawa 67s and the Ottawa Red Blacks, and then from an entertainment point of view. And then we have Jock Jam Shore, who's a lawyer at Gowling's Law Firm, associated with the ball club as well. That gives us a nice little local touch with the big names in Oseg and Mr. Cates. So very fortunate to be a part of the Frontier League. It's like the Champions sliding in to the Frontier League, but it's whole new ownership and a whole new organization that's involved in the 16 team league. And yeah, we're really fortunate to be a part of this league and have the right tools in place to make this very successful in the Ottawa market.
Awesome. So now you touched on a bit about the league, but like, what is the history of the league? You mentioned briefly about a merger there. So tell us kind of a little bit more about the league itself.
Yeah. So the Frontier League was established in 1993, which happened to be the same league year the Ottawa Lynx were founded. But it originally started as a league in Illinois, upstate Missouri, Kentucky, and it's been the longest running independent baseball league in North America. It's turned out many players, and it's really established itself as that quote rookie league. It likes to bring in players that have been overlooked in the draft and are coming out of smaller schools. So it gives them that name in a professional environment to move up to the ranks of, say, another independent league like the American Association, or slide into what formerly would be known as low A ball or short season A ball, just so they can get into that affiliated ranks. Of course, with Major League Baseball cutting a lot of ties and tightening up the affiliated ranks, it's really would make it tougher to get in. But coming into the Frontier League as, say, a 21-year-old and being overlooked in the draft, you have that experience of professional baseball where it then can catch you on with a affiliated club. And we're also very lucky, the Frontier League late September, actually before the Titans were announced as an expansion team in the league, that Major League Baseball announced partnerships with a bunch of independent baseball leagues in terms of marketing strategy. Because when people think of independent baseball, they might say, oh, these guys are probably done. But it's kind of a way for them to resurrect their careers in sort of ways. So you'll see on a lot of the teams, a lot of former guys that play double-A baseball, triple-A baseball, that's really nipping on the heels of the major leagues. I mean, also, there's a lot of guys that have played in the major leagues, one of them being a part of the Titans in terms of the roster building. But for the Frontier League, one of the big steps was merging with the Can-Am League at the end of the 2019 season. So originally it was an 18 league and a 16 league. They now come together and they become the biggest independent baseball league in North America. They establish a lot of the rules in terms of roster constructions and the way the game is played, basically the way that the Frontier League was, but they also took a lot of the rules from the Can-Am League. So it's kind of a hybrid between the two. So of course they didn't play last year. So this is really in 2021 that we'll really see the Frontier League, newly formed Frontier League, in action.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. So speaking on the roster, like, what are some of the big signings that have been made? How many players have been signed? How many more signings may be coming in the near future? And what can you say about that?
Yeah, so of course, the biggest signing of all would have to be our manager and Steve Brook, who's from Frankfort, Illinois, resides in the Missouri area. Actually, he's the sixth winningest manager in Frontier League history, and he's only been at the helm for 10 years. Of course, if you look at professional baseball in Ottawa, we've been blessed to, or if you look in recent memory, we've been blessed to have great managers come through the nation's capital. If you look at Hallenier, who was with the Ottawa Champions, was part of the Houston Astros in the major leagues through the 1980s. Sebastian Boucher, who's actually associated with the Ottawa Titans, managed the last year for the Champions in 2019. He's basically the Wayne Gretzky of the Can-Am League, led the league in hits, RBIs, you name it. He's really that figure that the Titans have in the front office that we're very fortunate to have. But Steve Brook has two Frontier League championships under his belt. He managed the River City Rascals from 2010 to 2019. Of course, that team ceased operations after 2019. What better way to go out than with the championship, right? So he'll lead our field point of view. He's brought in Nick Kennedy, who played under Steve Brook with River City for a number of years, last appeared in 2019 with the Rockland Boulders. So he's fresh out of into retirement, but now into the coaching side of things. But Steve has preached, he likes professionalism from his pitching staff and his catchers, because of course your pitchers and your catchers and your defense basically controls your game. So we've seen a lot of the roster spots taken up in terms of classifications on older players. So if you look at our pitching staff, Cody Mincy, who will serve as both the pitching coach and an anchor out of the bullpen, brings plus stuff from the right side, a towering presence. Kyle Goodell, it will serve as our hitting coach and one of our outfielders. He hasn't played in a couple of years, last appeared in 2018 with the Chicago Dogs of the American Association, but he's had some experience in affiliated ranks. He made as high as double-A in the San Diego Padres organization. But if you continue to look, Evan Grills, who's a Canadian, resides in nearby St. Albert, Ontario, which is just outside of Castleman. He has made it as high as triple-A, had an invite to big league spring training with the Colorado Rockies in 2018. He came down to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes and the American Association last year, in which the Gold Eyes had an abbreviated season playing basically as a travel team. But now he comes to Ottawa, basically in his own backyard. So we're looking forward to seeing Evan perform as that local figure of sorts here with the Titans. If you continue down the list, Hector Sanchez will serve primarily as a starting catcher. He actually caught one of Tim Lincecum's two no-hitters with the San Francisco Giants back in 2014. Has a World Series ring, or pardon me, it was 2012, one of Lincecum's no-hitters. And he also has a World Series ring from 2012 with the Giants. So he's trying to really reestablish himself coming off another championship with the Long Island Ducks of the Atlantic League in 2019. So he brings a lot of veteran presence to the locker room. As we continue on down the list, of course, around 15 players signed by the Titans so far, many more to come as the roster fills out. But if you look at a guy like Trevor Achenbach, who was a Frontier League All-Star in 2019, ranked in the top 10 a lot in offensive categories, he brings a big bat to Ottawa, going along with Kyle Gudel in the offensive lineup in the starting nine. But Zach Rakusin's another guy, a lifetime 288 hitter across independent baseball. That's another experienced guy coming to the nation's capital. But overall, it's a team that will play very well defensively. It's going to pitch very well. It's going to be competitive. And on paper, it looks really like a team that can compete in the Frontier League. Of course, all the faith is in ownership to put a competitive product on the field. And, of course, the faith in our skipper and Steve Brook. He's got a winning pedigree. He's made the playoffs 7 out of 9 times at the helm. So we're very comfortable with him bringing in these guys. And of course, with River City really seizing operations, allowed a lot of the players to become free agents. And with no season last year, it's made it very easy for him to reacquire these guys to bring that championship mold to Ottawa. And of course, he's made a trade with the Gateway Grizzlies, who he actually went briefly to for 2020, was supposed to be the pitching coach, but with no season, his contract was terminated or he left to pursue this opportunity in Ottawa. But he knows these players very well, and it's been very easy for him to bring these guys that he wants back from that championship team to Ottawa.
Awesome. So now, is there any word like on the season, how it'll look? Are they planning on at some point having fans? Is there a certain number of games, home games, away games, that kind of thing? How does that look?
Right now, if you look at the schedule, we're slated to play 96 games, 48 of them being at home. Starts with our home opener against the Tri-City Valley Cats, who you can basically say is our expansion cousin in the Frontier League. Tri-City was one of those teams cut by Major League Baseball when they tightened up the affiliated baseball ranks. So they were the short season A affiliate of the Houston Astros for 18 seasons. So they've had the likes of Evan Gross, who I mentioned, who was in the Astros organization, who's now with the Titans. George Springer played for the Tri-City Valley Cats. Dallas Keuchel, Kike Hernandez, many, many high-profile players came through the Astros organization. Jose Altuve also played there. But yeah, it's going to be great opening night. Hopefully, we're planning to play to the schedule at hand right now. But of course, there's many, many different variables in effect. But we're looking any way possible to welcoming fans safely back to the ballpark when it is safe to do so. If you take a look at our ticket packages on sale right now at tickets.ottawatitans.com, our partner at Igniter has greatly taken our seating plan at our ballpark and planned out the social distance. So should we be allowed to welcome fans back to our CGT park, we're looking forward to do so in a safe manner. But there are other plans in the works should the schedule out right now not be able to come to life.
Awesome. Well, that's a lot of info and very, very helpful. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting to the ballpark at some point this year. Today, my guest was Davide DeCipio, who joined me via Zoom. Thank you for taking so much time out of your busy schedule to join me today. This has been a huge blast.
No worries, Eric. Anytime.
Once again, big, big thank you to Davide DeCipio, media manager and broadcaster for the Ottawa Titans baseball team. Super looking forward to that season starting up. Don't go away again, because we've got more sports coverage, a look ahead on the Ottawa Senators, and of course, the moment you've all been waiting for, right? My sports bets picks of the week. Don't go away. We'll be right back on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hello again, and welcome back. Make sure you kick your shoes off before sitting down. I'm Zach Natto.
And I'm Eric Fox.
And right now, we're going to be looking at the Belleville Senators as well as the Ottawa Senators and looking ahead at their week. So, Eric, are you excited for the upcoming series against the Stockton Heat?
Yeah, I mean, for the Belleville Senators, they're heading to Calgary to play the Stockton Heat at the Saddle Dome. And I'm really excited for this because the last time they met, there was a couple of very one-sided games, one for the Senators and one for the Heat. So I think this is going to be an exciting weekend series. They play Thursday and Saturday against Stockton. And then they had a bit of a weird thing happened yesterday. The AHL announced that due to COVID-19 protocols affecting the Toronto Marlies, the Belleville Senators had their game on Wednesday, April 21st against the Marlies postponed. But then what they decided to do was they said, well, since you were going to be playing, let's move your game from May 9th against the Laval Rocket to Wednesday, April 21st in Ottawa. Now, I know you and I were talking off air before we started this show that we were looking at the schedule and going, wait, the Belleville Senators have to play the Marlies and the Rocket on the same time at the same arena on the same day. So we were a little confused until we saw the announcement about the schedule change. What did you think about that, Zach?
Well, I think it's awfully rude to pit the Belleville Senators against two teams. But now, like we said, we understand why there was a little discrepancy on the website. But more than anything, Eric, I'm excited to see Curtis Douglas in this upcoming series. And again, what he adds to the team in his first game, he scored a goal. So I can't wait to see him score many more.
Yeah, I mean, we already touched on how big and how much of a beast this kid is. So it's going to be really exciting to watch the weekend series for sure. Now, when we head over to their big club, the Ottawa Senators have a bit of an interesting week ahead of them. They play the Habs on Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada. But then they head out to Calgary and play two games against the Flames Monday and Tuesday. What do you think the Sens have in regards to like any sort of a chance at winning those games? How do you think that they'll fare in those three games?
Well, the Habs game is going to be hard, especially because that team seems to be doing pretty well right now. Also, it's an early game. It's not really a 7 o'clock game like Sens are used to usually. But the early game might prove better for them. I'm not too sure how they're going to be feeling after Friday night, but I'm feeling good about that game, as well as their back-to-back with the Flames. Bernard Docker and Shane Pinto should be in the lineup. Murray's back. We're bound to win one of those two games at least.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing when Pinto and Bernard Docker make their debut. There is talks that it will happen possibly on this road trip. So if it's against the Habs in Montreal on a Saturday, that would be incredible. But also if they have to play in one of those back-to-backs against the Flames, that'll definitely help. And like you said, having Murray back between the pipes is huge. Hopefully, being off injured for so long, he won't be rusty and he'll actually be back to a bit of what he used to be with the Penguins, because he had a bit of a rough season so far. So it'll be really interesting to see the goaltending matchups with him, with Forsberg, with whoever else they decide to put in net over the three games. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Same here. He's got a lot to prove with all the goalies that Otto has been signing lately, right?
Oh, I know. I can't even imagine. Like, you look through their organization right now. They have Murray. They have Forsberg. They have Decord. They have Gustafson. They have Mandeliz that they just re-signed. And the list goes on and on. They have so much goaltending depth right now. It's going to be interesting to see where they slot everybody. But it's definitely better to have more goalies than not enough, because we've seen that happen where the Senators lost Hogberg and Murray and Decord all at the same time. So it's better to have the goaltending depth in case you lose multiple goalies to injuries. So it's definitely going to be a fun week to watch for the Senators.
It's always a fun weekend and a fun week when the Sens get to play hockey, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible to be able to watch some Sens hockey. Now, this is the moment that you have all been waiting for. Zach, how did we do last week in our press box sports picks? And what are you looking at this week?
Well, it feels good to be positive for the first time since we started this show, but now we have a record and a reputation to protect. I've been working in the lab extra hard to make sure we get solid picks this week to keep us on top. Last week, we got 4 picks out of 4 picks right. A perfect score for the perfect show. That makes us 8-6 after 4 episodes. And going into today is no different. All these picks are dynamite. We're starting things off with the money line. I almost felt dirty making this pick, but it was too good not to consider. My money line this week is once again backing our cash cow, the New York Islanders. But here's why. They're playing the Boston freaking Bruins, a top tier, top to bottom, all around good team who just got 2 great forwards who've already been updated into the lines. And even after a shaky game against the NHL's punching bag, the Buffalo Sabres, Hall and Lazar are good enough. They can take those days in between and adjust better into Boston's fold. Boston is 4th in their division with New York being number 2. So Boston needs to win this one. And I think they're going to come out swinging hard for this one early in the game, which makes them the favorite. So we got to back the Islanders. I just can't cheer for the Bruins in any way, shape, or form. I'll go out and say it. My money line pick this week, the New York Islanders once again. Going on to the next one is an over-under. It's the over in the Sacramento Kings and Phoenix Suns game. The Kings have a royal 114 points per game, and so do the Suns. Sacramento have a 7-game losing skid, while the Suns are burning up the league and have 4 wins in a row going into this. But who wins doesn't matter in an over-under. Sacramento has had some pretty close games this season, finding a way to keep pace with top teams like Milwaukee and Brooklyn. I can see Phoenix setting the pace to a high-scoring game, enough for the two teams to get the over. My over-under pick for this week is the over in the Sacramento Kings and Phoenix Suns game. Moving on to the third pick. A lot of tempting picks to look at for the handicap and spread, but I'm taking a risk with this one. I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers taking out the Lightning with the +1.5 spread. After snapping their loss streak against the Stars, the Panthers are looking to beat out Tampa for that number 2 spot in the Central. Florida got some great players from the draft deadline, and even though they're not going to play in this game, they're looking for some momentum heading into when they eventually join the lineup. Plus, they just got Anthony Duclair, the former Senator, back into the fold, and he brings a fire to the whole team. Nobody's getting discouraged on the Panthers, even going against the reigning Cup champs in the start of a back-to-back. My third pick this week is the +1.5 puck line for the Florida Panthers. And for my final bonus pick of the week, get your beer and hot dogs. I'm taking you out to the ball game on this one. The warmer weather is coming, and baseball is practically synonymous with hotter temperatures. My press box bonus pick this week is the Philadelphia Phillies batting up a win against the New York Mets. The Mets are 1 spot above the Phillies in the standings, but baseball is a team sport, and the Phillies outclass them in every team category, runs per game. Philly has a better batting average, 6 more home runs, they beat them in field percentage, and have a bigger earned run average than the New York Mets. To me, this is a no-brainer, betting the plus run line for this one on the Phillies. But you gotta make this bet now. It's hot off the press, and the game starts at 12:10 today. So hurry up before the bookies smarten up and bring the value down. My bonus pick of the week is the Philadelphia Phillies shutting down the New York Mets. And those are my picks for this week, Eric. What do you think?
Wow, Zach, I gotta say I am hyped. Having you go 4 for 4 last week, what an incredible week. I mean, you called it on the Masters, you called it on the hockey, the basketball. Like, it was just fire all week, man. I can't get over how amazing that feeling is for us to be in that plus. We're +2 right now. So even if we go 2-2 this week, we'll still be at 500. So it's going to be fantastic. Let's go 4 for 4. I have full confidence in your picks, man. I think this is going to be incredible again.
Let's keep this train going. And that about does it for our show today. What a time we had. We really learned a lot about not just each other, but about ourselves. Right, Eric?
Oh, man, this was so much fun. We missed you, Lita. We know that you'll be coming back stronger than ever next week. But let's just enjoy the week ahead and let's go 4 for 4 on those picks and let's just have a lot of fun.
And sports is all about having fun at the end of the day.
Definitely. Well, thank you all for joining myself, Eric Fox,
and Zach Natto
on the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. It's been a blast, and we will see you again next week.